Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'll be speaking with our co-host, Alan Phillips, attorney at law. Today is December 9th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 8 of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. I want to thank everyone for joining us and to know that this issue is not only going on in the United States right now. I've been reading quite a bit in the news. All over the world, there are many controversies regarding vaccinations, whether they are safe and who should get them, what the reactions are from freedom fighters and everything else. Okay, I'm going to check to see if Alan is on the line with me. Alan.
I am
hello.
Here, Debbie. I am here.
Great. I'm glad to see you. It looks like there's someone else calling in, and they're going to have to let me know who they are. If anyone is calling in, please get on the chat, the live chat on VTR, and let me know who you are and what your issue is, and then we'll see if we're going to let you in today on the call. Also, I had just a little starter today, a quote from Winston Churchill. Man will occasionally stumble over the truth, but usually manages to pick himself up, walk over or around it, and carry on. And we have a lot of issues that we talk about on the show about what is truth, how do we deal with it, the legal issues, how we maybe tiptoe around what's going on today, and then there are people who are actually rebels and are doing some action, and that's what the vaccination rights and legal counsel and all of those new websites are all about. You're going to give us some information. For those who are new to the show, Alan Phillips is one of the nation's leading vaccine rights attorneys, and he advises individuals, families, and other attorneys, groups, and organizations through talks and conferences and all sorts of things. He is really out there. I am so pleased to have him with us. And I would like to also remind everyone that he does have an ebook that provides information for people in every kind of situation, whether they're that are in need of some sort of an exemption or waiver, that he can usually counsel you in that regard. And if there's any other kind of news that you want to talk about to start the show, Alan, I welcome that.
Well, we can go in to talk about some of the court cases we were discussing before the show.
Okay, that sounds great. And I'll keep an eye on the live chat to see if there's anybody who has a comment or question.
There have been... Okay. From time to time, there are various state and federal court cases having to do with one aspect or another of vaccine rights. I try to keep up with them the best I can. As I may have mentioned previously in another show, anytime I hear about a vaccine rights-related court case where somebody is suing to for one form or another or one a right to refuse vaccines in one case or situation or another, I'm always, or that in any way has to do with our rights. I'm always cheering from the sidelines if it's not one of my own cases, and wishing them the best. But on a practical level, I have observed over time that vaccine rights litigation, taking these issues to court, at least as the cases pertain to the larger vaccine issue, vaccine rights issues, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a moment, they just generally have a very low success rate. And I want to distinguish that from individual situations where somebody is clearly denied a present right, and they have, of course, we all have the option in a situation like that to sue for the enforcement of our rights if we feel that's the case. There are also some situations where it's not clear either what the right is or whether or not there's a right, and sometimes those matters end up in court. That's a legitimate, potentially legitimate situation to have a court case too. But on the one hand, while I'm cheering from the sidelines, I'm often skeptical, partly because of the historical setting in which these kinds of cases tend not to be successful. And for general rights issues, I really think, and because of that track record, I think generally the legislative arena is one where we really should be putting our greater amount of time and energy. And I'll give you an example. I had a conversation with a medical doctor by email recently who was saying, you know, something to the effect of, why aren't there any attorneys out there who are taking on some of these kinds of cases and so forth. And with regard to what those in the alternative vaccine community know is an abundance of information, scientific information, medical studies, reliable sources of information that contradict some of the commonly held assumptions about the safety and necessity of vaccines. The problem with that in the legal arena in terms of court cases is that the courts are not in the position of assessing and evaluating what the scientific truth is, at least not in a direct way. What they are in the business of doing is weighing the evidence. And any time you can get a doctor to come in and say vaccines cause autism or vaccines are more harmful than good, as a minority of doctors probably believe, or at least feel that the question is sufficiently unclear as to be a basis for people to have the right to make their own informed choices. For every doctor who would come in and favor an alternative position, there's going to be 1,000 more who are going to come in and say, no, vaccines are necessary, they're safe or safe enough, and therefore people are going to have to, should get them. And so when you have that kind of a situation, the weight of the evidence, regardless of the objective scientific truth, is going to be in favor of the vaccines. So again, the place for, it doesn't mean that the information we have that suggests that there are serious problems with vaccines is useless. Quite the contrary, it's critical information. However, the place to direct that generally is in the legislative arena. Go talk to your legislative representatives, because there is arguably a legislative presumption that vaccines are sufficiently safe and effective and necessary. And what I mean by that is when state legislatures or federal agencies, in the case of the Department of Defense for the military, the USCIS for immigrants and U.S. Territories and the like, whenever a legislature or agency enacts a vaccine mandate, they are presumed to have considered the safety and effectiveness, and by the enactment of that statute or regulation that imposes the mandate, they are in effect saying this is officially safe enough to be mandated and needed. The necessity is there. The net benefit is great enough. And so arguably a court cannot second-guess the state legislatures or federal agencies on those points. They can only look to see if they followed their correct procedures. They can't sort of open that up and second-guess the state legislature. So arguably, courts can't even address those issues. So it is important to understand the limitations of the courts, what they can and can't do, and so that we can focus our attention in the most effective venue. Having said that, you know, there are from time to time some cases that are terrific out there. There was one recently about with a judge in Canada who refused to order vaccines. It was a welfare case. The parents were opposed to vaccines, and I believe it was the welfare agency that took it to court and asked the judge to order vaccines, and the judge did not order the vaccines. And needless to say, this case is being spreading around like wildfire in the alternative vaccine community, as perhaps well it should. But I think there's a
Did they make a final judgment on that case? Because there's a couple of things going on in Canada right now. Did that judge actually say this child, as a welfare case, was not obligated to have a vaccine? Was that the final judgment?
The final judgment is that the judge says vaccines aren't essential medical treatments. It was a family court judge,
okay.
And it actually involved four kids. But there's
okay.
an important, you know, so that's, you know, and people are commenting, making the pro-vaccine choice community, the alternative vaccine community, is coming out with all kinds of applause, which I think is due here. But
not the pro-vaccine, pro-choice.
The pro-choice or alternative vaccine community is saying, great, finally there's a, you know, a sane judge somewhere, or that's, you know, comments to that effect. There's a limitation in this case that I think people are likely to be overlooking, though, and that is that this is a case from Canada where vaccines are not mandatory. And
okay.
I read a comment just this morning that apparently there are some school systems that require some vaccines for school enrollment, but even there they always allow medical, philosophical, and religious exemptions. So it's my understanding that as a whole, the nation of Canada does not mandate vaccines. And so the judge isn't looking to decide in this case, if I'm correct on that, the judge in this case was not looking to decide whether or not to enforce a mandate, which could very well be the case, or the situation, let me say, for any comparable case here in the States. And there have been
okay.
states. There was a case here in North Carolina a few years ago where parents had lost custody of their children to the state, but they did not have the parental rights terminated. And the question was, and the parents did not want to vaccinate, the state, of course, did, and the question was, who got to make the decision? Well, here in North Carolina, because of the particular wording of the exemption law, the state had that authority, and so they won that case. There was a similar...
Can you explain that? Who won the case, and what was it about again?
The state had custody of the children.
Okay.
Because of parenting problems, and this, it was a complicated matter from what I understand.
Okay.
It wasn't just about vaccines. But the issue of vaccines went up on appeal to the North Carolina
mm-hmm.
Court of Appeals. And the parents were arguing on appeal that they were the parents, they had not lost their parental rights, they should be making the decision, and the children should not be vaccinated. The
okay.
state was arguing, the state who had custody of the children was arguing that they had the authority to make that decision, and
okay.
therefore, and they were pro-vaccine, and therefore the kids should be vaccinated. Well, the parents lost that case, but in my opinion, they lost that case because of the wording of the law in North Carolina. To me, it was kind of a no-brainer. I didn't really even understand why it would have gone up on appeal unless the parents, you know, sometimes people will appeal perhaps whether it's legally feasible or not, but then nothing ventured, nothing gained. So there is a point at which an appeal becomes frivolous to pursue, and I don't think this case
Did you think the parents could actually win the case and not have the children vaccinated by retaining their parental rights, or were you surprised, you know, at this?
If somebody had approached me about a situation like that, I would have said, I don't see how you can possibly win this, because our religious exemption statute says if the parent, guardian, or person in loco parentis, that's a Latin phrase that means somebody
okay.
in the place of a parent. And when the state has custody of the kids, the state is in the place of a parent for those kids.
Okay.
So for me, the plain language reading of the statute would give that authority to the state. I'm not happy about that as an individual, but as an attorney,
uh-huh.
that would have been my assessment. So I was surprised. I see that from time to time in cases, and it may be that there are more subtleties, you know, beneath the surface that I'm not aware of. There was a New York attorney who had a case in West Virginia District Court a few months ago arguing – that the U.S. Constitution requires states to have a religious exemption immunizations. As far as I know, that exact point has never been ruled on before, so it is at least hypothetically an open question. But many years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court said in what's called dicta, in a different opinion, and dicta is where the court talks about related matters or how they got their decision, but it's not the actual holding or ruling in the case. And this was a case that I'm referring to from many years ago that was not about vaccine religious exemptions, but in explaining how they were getting to their holding or resolution in that particular case, they made a reference that suggested that if this issue ever came before the Supreme Court as to whether or not there was a constitutional requirement for states to have a religious exemption immunizations, they would probably rule no. So while that doesn't constitute legal precedent in any formal sense, it certainly is an indication. And based on that, and just the fact that we have states that don't have religious exemptions, it seems to me that that was an uphill battle. And for whatever reason or combination of reasons, that ended up being the outcome. So, sometimes we can make our best judgment and we're surprised at the way things come out. And other times we make our best judgment and we're validated. So, that goes both ways with any attorney.
Alan, what you opened with that was that the New York attorney in the West Virginia court case arguing that the United States Constitution requires a religious exempt. Was that a closed case? Is that, or is it still open?
Last I heard is they were considering appealing that, and I did not ever hear for certain one way or the other whether or not it went up on appeal. I'm of the impression that it didn't. But I can't say absolutely. If they did appeal, then the final decision to that would be open. I just think I would love for that case to win. So I'm in a curious position sometimes where I'm trying to offer opinions to people that I wish I could tell them something otherwise, but that my legal analysis is whatever it is. I think that's a tall order to try to take on that matter, but I presume that any attorney who would take that on has done his or her research and has found what they think is a plausible argument. There's a case in South Carolina. I'm sorry, go ahead. Do you have a question there?
Yeah. We have a number of comments in the chat room right here. They're kind of long. I'll just read them out for you. The mandatory vaccines violate the Nuremberg Code, a set of medical ethical standards created due to the horrors of the Nazi experimentation of humans.
Let me stop one by one. Yeah, let's take it one piece at a time here, and that way I'll get to as many as we have time for. This is something I hear a lot, and I do not disagree with the fundamental premise there that vaccines arguably violate the Nuremberg Code. Certainly, emergency vaccines even more so because of the lack of testing. However, here's another classic example of the I hear you loud and clear as a human being. Here's my legal analysis, and it's not consistent. And I'm sorry to say that, but it isn't. The Nuremberg Code is not binding law anywhere that I know of, certainly not here in the U.S., other than the extent to which language has been borrowed from it and put into our state statutes or federal statutes and so forth. As it turns out, for example, there is language modeled right after the Nuremberg Code in some federal statutes that puts limitations on federally funded medical research. So the Nuremberg Code has not been just thrown out there, to no effect. But and I hear similar kinds of things. For example, last fall I heard this a lot during the swine flu thing. These swine flu vaccines violate the Nuremberg Code, the Declaration of Helsinki, the Constitution, blah, 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 a whole long list of things. And the fact of the matter is, for every person who says they violate them, you can find one, if not 10 or 100, who say, no, they don't. And these are opinions only. They're valid opinions. I happen to agree with a lot of these opinions from the alternative vaccine community, but they are exactly that, opinions. So there's no legal violation. In other words, you can't go into court and say, I don't have to get vaccines because the Nuremberg Code says such and such. The judge is going to say, I don't care what it says. It has no application here. in terms of a legal standard that I have to follow or can follow, really.
Because we've talked about that in the past about precedent by state, and that was a different issue, and it wasn't. It is not part of our constitutional.
Well,
it's
not legal authority that's binding in the U.S. Unless, other than the extent to which that language has been, used in a statute or some other form of legal authority binding that is binding here in the U.S. It's not that those comments are irrelevant. They're very relevant. It's not that the belief that vaccines violate the Nuremberg Code has no place. It does. It doesn't have a place in a courtroom, because it isn't legal authority that has any weight in a courtroom. But it could very well be persuasive with a state legislator or a federal legislator if you explain exactly how and why. And you might be able to persuade them of that in support of some particular legislation or in support of your opposition to some legislation that's trying to mandate more vaccines. So all of these kinds of comments are helpful, but it all goes – my explanation here is all intending to help people explain that it's not a question of if these things are relevant. It's a question of where are they relevant, and are they relevant in a courtroom in this particular instance? Probably not. Are they relevant – I can't say that it would absolutely have no relevance. I'm just saying it's not legal authority, binding here in the U.S.
Right.
Therefore, let's use it as a persuasive argument with the legislators who make the laws, because once they make a law – whatever their rationale for it is, Nuremberg Code or not, once they make a law, that law then is legal authority that you can take to court.
Okay, so let me continue with the comments then coming in. So you've explained, I think you've kind of answered, to show that it can be used as information or persuasive language in furthering our legislative codes in the United States and in each state as a point of interest, but it doesn't have any weight in terms of precedent right now in actual law that we have to abide by. And the question that's going on here is, the facts show that the United States and its states are violating international law. And so, since the vaccines are what we've talked about in previous sessions, mandated by state, and then there's some when there's a federal emergency that can maybe override that. And so this is why, we were talking earlier that it's really very fascinating and interesting to talk about whether vaccines are harmful or what they do to the human body and what's in them and all the big hype and stuff like that. But learning about law and the legal issues can become not as interesting and exciting to talk about, but it's more important than anything else, because this is how we live our lives and what we must abide by ethically. I mean, not ethically, but how we are able to maintain our rights and our beliefs in the United States. So that's why it's really important for us to learn from you. So here his question is, can the U.S. pick and choose what international laws it wishes to abide by? I guess the answer is yes. I'll let you answer that one.
Well, I'll give you the best shot I have. I want to go back just a moment and reel me back in on this, question if I lose sight of it. But I just want to explain, when I make reference to what I call legal authority, we live in a society of laws that has a legal net, so to speak, over everything. Most of the time on a daily basis, most of that is pretty invisible to us. We follow the traffic laws more or less, and we run about our day, and we don't really bump up in a very direct, conscious, and visible way with the law until we run into some sort of conflict in our life or some need for, referencing or whatever.
Like if we have to vaccinate to enter our child into school, which is a very common annual event.
Right. But when I say there has to be legal authority and that, the, for example, the Nuremberg Code is not legal authority here in the U.S., let me clarify exactly what I mean that legal authority is so that we have clear points of reference. So when I say legal authority that we do have to go by, that would be state, and this occurs at both state and federal levels. We have statutes. We have regulations that are promulgated, is the formal term, by state or federal agencies. And like with exemptions, a lot of times you'll have a statute that sets out the exemption, but the health department will promulgate regulations that tell you the details. Or if the health department in your state creates a form, it'll be done by regulation, for example. And then we have legal precedent at state and federal levels where courts interpret the law. If there's a conflict about what somebody's rights are, often that ends up in a legal dispute, and some legal disputes result in legal precedent that become guideposts, if you will. So we have statutes, regulations, and legal precedent. These are the primary sources of legal authority that people should look to when they want to say, what are my rights? A lot of times people confuse what their rights are, what they think their rights should be, with what their rights really are. And if you can't point to something in legal authority, a statute, a legal precedent, a regulation, or something that says this is how it is, then you may be embarking on something that's more of the what you want it to be than what it actually is. And people in the alternative vaccine community do this frequently, as do people in the general public with regard to constitutional rights. People are often can often be heard saying, oh, well, I have a right to free speech, or I have a right for this, that, or the other. And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. It depends on the situation and the facts and so forth. But it's an important distinction to be made, what our rights are versus what we think they should be. And once you get clear on that distinction, and in the case of vaccine, the right to make an informed choice, you realize how limited that is. The place to change that, for the most part, is going to be, again, with the legislatures or specific relevant agencies. Now, I'm sorry, I just wanted to add that as a follow-up point. Please reel me back into the question again.
Well, we have had another 10 comments going on since we started that, and you were kind of just now reviewing about what the laws are, what in our minds we think our rights are, but that is not necessarily the case in the law of the country that we're living, that we have precedents and state and federal statutes and regulations that we must abide by. And those are the legal issues.
And let me explain.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Let me explain why I left constitutions out of that list of legal authority, because constitutions, we have state, we have a federal constitution, and every state has a state constitution. Those are certainly also sources of legal authority. But oftentimes, if not typically, at least in, for example, the realm of, let's say, religious rights as an example that's clearly relevant and important in the vaccine arena, often constitutions give us kind of broad sweeping language, and the way that we know how those broad sweeping passages from a state or federal constitution apply to specific situations, there's probably no constitution in the U.S. that uses the word immunization or vaccination, for example. How do we know?
Right, it's not literally stated in our constitution, the word vaccination.
Right, so how do we know what our rights are? Well, the way you know what your rights are under the Constitution is to go look at the legal precedent where courts have interpreted the Constitution with regard to specific issues. So I didn't leave out constitutions because they're not a source of legal authority. They are. It's just you're going to be hard-pressed to find anything in a Constitution that gives you any kind of detail or specificity on this issue. And so you need to get to find out what the constitutional rights are, you look to legal precedent. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right. So the Constitution is very broad, and then depending on the era that you're living, you're looking at how it was interpreted for the people at that time. And we're dealing with a time in history where supposedly science and the medical communities are involved in what is protecting us as citizens medically, and dealing with these contagious diseases that come in and out in cycles and waves, and they're kind of saying that the best way to protect everyone, and this is how we get into the herd immunity issue, you know, it's a way of thinking. It's a belief system that maybe some people are actually agreeing with, but there are other people who don't agree with that. I wasn't meaning to get into that right now because we have so many other questions here. Let me just read what's going on this chat line here. There's no evidence that vaccines work. This is something we've spoken about before. Vaccine promoters like to point their fingers at critics and say, prove to me vaccines do not work. But I have something to say to all the vaccine promoters. Show me some evidence that they do work. So this is kind of like he says, she says, you know, like in the movies, who really is the person who is going to validate the effectiveness of these kinds of drugs or that are injections that are being inoculated into individuals, and the fact that there's so much in them there that has not been tested. Let me go on, and he says, the CDC has an annual budget of $2.1 billion to promote vaccines. No federal agency associated with the CDC, such as the NIH, can obtain funds for adequate scientific testing, since such testing would expose vaccine failure and vaccine damage. And also, I wanted to mention that this particular week in United States history is a special week to push vaccines. I was just learning about it today. Let me see if I can find that. It's a Vic Communications, actually. Let me see if I can find that information. If anybody wants to find it, Vic Communications, I think it's something like that. And each day of the week, they're trying to promote something else in the United States to kind of change people's minds about that vaccinations are really good. Let's see here. It's called Vaccination and Propaganda. It's a big business. It's National Influenza Vaccination Week, December 5th through December 11th, which is we're on December 9th right now. It's going to provide an opportunity for public health professionals, healthcare professionals, health advocates, communities, and families across the country to work together to promote flu vaccination before the traditional winter peak in flu activity. Flu season, they say, is unpredictable and can begin early in the fall or late in the spring. By focusing on 1 week in December, and these are all partners that are getting together, and that's why you're seeing literally in every state, in every community, you're seeing this huge push on all of the news media, not to be wary or fearful about the vaccine, because every single media story you're going to read, it says that it's safe. But we don't really have that data to back that statement up. It's
so
out there. Go ahead.
So the question is, what do we do about that? And again, these are arguments to take to our representatives to get the laws changed. There's something. See, there's clearly and absolutely a prerequisite in the vaccine debate to first inform yourself. And these are all issues that are part of the ongoing job that responsibility that each of us concerned in this issue have, and that is to keep ourselves informed and to increase our understanding and knowledge and awareness and so forth, because it's a vast issue with unfolding aspects continually. But there's a trap that a lot of people fall into in this arena, and that is they get stuck in kind of a cycle of venting over and over again their frustration about all these different things, and it's a necessary prerequisite. But once you reach a point where you believe that there are serious problems and something has to change, then you need to direct at least some of your energy, maybe even the larger part of it, to enacting that change. And again, the place where the rubber meets the road here with regard to our rights is going to be on primarily on the statutory level. What do the laws in your state or in the Department of Defense for the military or, you know, whatever maybe federal agency may be concerned, what do the laws say? What are your rights? What are the limitations? What are the boundaries? If you don't like that, there's a process you can engage in to try to bring about changes to that. What are new regulations and statutes that the vaccine industry is promoting to require even more vaccines? As we mentioned last time, there are over 330 vaccines either on the market already or in production. This is a
330?
There's a feeding frenzy. Yeah, there's a feeding frenzy here in the pharmaceutical industry. Every man, woman, and child is a potential recipient of vaccines from the date, moment of birth to, as I like to say it a little bit facetiously, but maybe not so much, until the last vaccine takes them out in old age or whatever age. So, I mean, it's just a vast potential market here. And so it's no wonder that there's a pharmaceutical feeding frenzy about this. So, of course, they have sought to influence and control state and federal agencies. They've done it at a manner and a level and degree at this point that I personally feel goes way beyond anything that's ethically appropriate. When you've got the director of the CDC last December announcing that she's changing jobs and becoming the president of Merck Vaccines, she didn't even have the decency to try to keep that hidden. She announced it. I mean, it's just like you've got this revolving door between agency and industry. We have the ACIP that is made up of people right out of the vaccine industry who are making the recommendations to the CDC. That our government would endorse and promote one of many different health modalities is a very serious concern for me as a citizen. I'm not quite sure what the legal implications of that are right now, but it certainly, as a citizen, bothers me greatly. If my government's going to mandate anything with healthcare, and I don't think it should, but if it's going to, it ought to give me a choice of all the different modalities that are available. And, of course, as you want to know, Debbie, there's tremendous history of success with homeoprophylaxis as disease prevention using homeopathy. So we do have, two or more options here, but we're only hearing about one and all the others are discredited, and that's not appropriate thing
for
our government to be doing.
They say at the end of all of their big hype articles, they say wash your hands and cover your face when you sneeze. They don't mention the issue of vitamin D, which is so big today. All the alternative healthcare providers are talking about just having vitamin D, just good nutrition. We're not a preventative medical society. Vaccinations, to me, they're calling it preventative, but I don't believe it's preventative because of the potential for side effects. It's really incurring damage, and they are not safe. But that's not what you're going to hear. And the question is, what are the lifestyle changes that each citizen can do in their own life to raise their level of strength, vital force strength, and self-immunization based on how they live their life? And so this is a major issue. But coming back to the legal issues, which is your expertise, you're just telling us that we have to step up to the plate and get involved in legislation. And I think that, you know what? I think people are so unsure about how to do that and fear that if they become part of a court case, how will that change their life? You know, and it means really taking risk, really going out of the box for them for what they would their normal day-to-day life is. And I think that's kind of frightening. Why it's not happening.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Debbie. So let me speak to that. There are a vast minority of people who feel compelled and allow themselves to be driven by that to the point where they will actually dedicate a whole section of their lives to forming an organization or doing the kind of work that really is necessary to have a realistic chance at getting new legislation introduced and passed. And it can sometimes be a project that goes on for years. I'll tell you, the people that I've talked to who have taken that on deserve terrific and just highly commendable folks. But to be one of those kind of leaders really does take a major commitment that most people, as a purely practical matter, just cannot do. They don't have the time or what have you. However, there is really, really good news with regard to that concern, and that's we've talked about before, and I'm going to keep on mentioning this. The National Vaccine Information Center has recently launched what they call their advocacy portal. And Dawn Richardson with the NVIC, Dawn and her husband have spent months putting this together. They have created the internet infrastructure to make vaccine legislation a much easier process for all of us. Legislative initiatives are not a strong point for me, but I have taken this on. I'm proud to say that I'm the director for North Carolina with the advocacy portal. Roughly half of the states either have a director or will have a director in the near future. And I know Don is going to be looking for people to step up to the plate in other states. Now, maybe directors are the people in that category I mentioned earlier who, you know, are willing or able to dedicate a part of their lives. It takes a tremendous amount of time, and you don't get paid for it. But some of us
right.
don't feel strongly enough about it that that needs to happen. But guess what? The vast majority of us don't need to do that because there are enough others who are taking that lead position. So with the advocacy portal, you can sign up. It doesn't cost you anything. You can go see to your go to your state and see what is the pending legislation and see potentially links to legislative-related, vaccine legislation-related news and events and so forth. Now, I'll tell you, the North Carolina page right now, I think, is empty. We don't have any pending legislation. The legislators are going to reconvene in January, and we'll see if any of the previously previous legislation gets brought up again. They were trying to get something passed that would have vaccines be distributed through the schools. You know, you mentioned vitamin D. There was
right.
a recent Japanese study that showed that vitamin D is more effective than vaccines at preventing flu. If the school system
right.
in the state were really concerned about preventing flu, they would give vitamin D supplements, costs a heck of a lot less than vaccines. There's no death or disability that gets caused from taking a vitamin D supplement. There always
right.
is with any broad distribution of vaccines. And it's more effective. So it's safer, less money, more effective. It's a no-brainer from an objective scientific point of view.
But it won't make them any money.
But it won't make them any money, and so it's not going to happen because the folks who will make money with their products being used are going to spend money trying to get those laws enacted. So, you know, in some regards, it's an uphill battle, but this is an arena where, for me, and I hope all your listeners, failure is not an option. So we've got to organize. But it's not important so much how much or exactly what anybody does. What's important is that everybody do whatever it is they can. There will be people who take up the larger pieces of this mantle
right.
and will cut a path so that those who aren't able to do that, again, for time or whatever reasons, can do whatever they can do. Most anybody can send an email, make a phone call, write a letter. So you can go to the advocacy portal to find out what's going on in your state and when that is needed. And this is going to really facilitate this whole issue and process, and I'm just really excited about the advocacy portal, nvic.org, and there are links there to the advocacy
okay.
portal.
Okay, nvic.org. And I want to tell everyone, this is the end of the show for today, educate before you vaccinate. Look up that information about vitamin D in the Japanese study. Do what you think is right, and if you can share this information, we welcome that. I want to thank Alan one more time for being our guest, and we will see you the next time. Take care, everyone.
You too. Look
Bye, Alan.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Allow our souls to shine, reaching for the great new love and healing for mankind. Share your light, let your love be unfurled. One by one, we are changing the world. Your truth be unfurled.